Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Ethan Elkind. Tonight, we talk scooters and the future of urban personal mobility. At the end of March, three battery electric scooter companies deposited over 2,000 scooters onto San Francisco streets. While scooters represent a good alternative to private cars or Uber or Lyft to some, to others, they are an unregulated nuisance that will negatively impact our streets and sidewalks and detract from public transportation. What is certain is that scooters have sparked a conversation in our city around various modes of personal transportation, such as electric bikes, electric skateboards, hoverboards, and others. Their numbers are increasing, and they seem quintessentially Bay Area in some respects, melding technology, innovative ideas, environmental concerns, and a desire to reduce congestion. But have city officials and the scooter companies agreed on sensible regulations? Do scooters solve more problems than they create? Joining me to discuss this at the top of the hour is Cheryl Brinkman, chairman of the Board of Directors of the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency, or SFMTA. Welcome, Cheryl.
Hi, thank you very much for having me, Ethan.
And we're also joined by Susan Shaheen, co-director of the UC Berkeley Transportation and Sustainability Research Center and director of Innovative Mobility Research. Welcome, Susan.
Thanks so much, Ethan.
And later on in this hour, we will be joined by Jessica Lehman, Executive Director of the Senior and Disability Action. And of course, we want to hear from you. We'll be opening up the phone lines in about 20 minutes. And you can call us with your questions or comments for the panel at 1-866-798-TALK. That's 1-866-798-8255. And you can feel free to email or post your comment in the intervening 20 minutes. So, Cheryl, let's begin with you. What are the new regulations that were agreed upon by the city and the scooter companies, and are they where they should be?
So the regulations, the permit legislation has been passed by the city, and right now what MTA staff is doing is working with the scooter companies to make sure that they can fill out the permit. We haven't actually gotten a permit filled out and returned to the city yet. And basically what it does is it does put a cap on the number of scooters that we'll have in the city. The total scooter cap is going to be 1,250 for now, possibly going up to about 2,500 in 6 months. And it's put a few regulations on there for safety, for data privacy, to make sure that the companies will put scooters out in communities of concern and not just cluster them in a certain, you know, certain parts of the city.
And were there any other cities that have regulations that San Francisco could look to as a model, or is San Francisco really pioneering regulations on scooter companies?
I think we are pioneering these regulations, just as we've pioneered the regulations for the jump bikes. And, so I think Santa Monica had the Bird scooters, but I don't think any other city has had the quick phase out of three different scooter companies the way we've had.
And you mentioned this cap that's on the number of scooters that can be on the streets at any one particular point in time. Doesn't this model, though, really only work for the companies if there are many scooters around and that they are readily available for people?
Yes, but I think where the SFMTA is going with this is, instead of just allowing these scooter companies to flood the city with scooters that then, you know, might get vandalized, might be broken, might have dead batteries, this gives them a really good incentive to make sure that they manage those scooters and to show us that they actually can manage those scooters, that they're not going to have sort of piles of broken and dead scooters clustered in neighborhoods that's not going to be blocking the sidewalks. This really gives them the opportunity to show that they can be a transportation partner with the city of San Francisco and not just sort of a street litter, as people have been calling them.
And were the companies, the scooter companies themselves, supportive of these regulations?
I think they probably would prefer not to have regulations, but I'm hoping that they will see the benefit of working with the city and partnering with the city, especially when it comes to sharing data and to making sure that they meet our safety goals and our sustainability goals and our congestion goals. So I'm hoping that at least one and maybe more of these companies will sort of rise to the occasion, just the way that the electric scooter company Scoot did, and those are the ones that are, you know, like moped scooters. They've been working with the city incredibly successfully, and they're doing really well. and their usage has gone up and complaints have gone down. So I think there's really a good role model there in Scoot for these scooter companies to work with. And the same with the jump bikes. They've really managed to partner with the city really well.
Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of opposition initially when these scooters came out that they were blocking the sidewalks. Now with these new regulations, does that seem to have addressed the controversy? I mean, does the public generally seem to be kind of more accepting of these technologies now that the regulations are in place?
Again, we don't have a scooter company permitted yet, but I think that the citizens of San Francisco realize that now there is a format for some regulations. There are some guidelines in place, and that they'll have somebody to go to with their concerns. They'll be able to come to the SFMTA when they do see problems with these scooters, and the SFMTA will be able to work with the scooter companies to make sure that problems don't continue.
And in terms of the enforcement of these regulations, whose job is it going to be now to enforce good behavior on the part of the scooter users and the scooter companies themselves?
It is still going to be up to the scooter companies to make sure that their users pilot these scooters in a socially acceptable and legal way. So it is going to be up to them to make sure that their users, for example, don't go zipping down the sidewalk and knocking people over or leaving the scooters in places where people might trip over them or they might block access to a doorway or a stairway. So that still is on the companies to sort of make sure that their users understand that they have to be good citizens with this. And I think they can get there. I mean, as we've seen, people really like these scooters. The thing that really strikes me is when you see people going by on these scooters, they look really happy. They're having fun on these. And they're a good last-mile solution or half-mile solution. So I think that the motivation for the users will be to make sure that they can continue to have access to these scooters, and hopefully that will help the users behave in a way that's going to make these a successful part of our transportation profile in San Francisco.
And do you have any sense how the companies plan to enforce good behavior by their customers?
I don't. I'm not sure how they're going to do that. I mean, I assume it will be something on the website when you sign up, maybe signage on the scooter itself. I had heard the scooter companies talk about having each user snap a picture of where they parked the scooter when they got off it and parked it so that they then send it in. But I'm not sure, to be honest, how they're going to do that.
And, you know, well, we've talked about some of the negative side of it, the controversy that has ensued with their advent in the city. You know, I hear other people complaining about scooter enforcement on the sidewalks when scooters are blocking pedestrian access, but then it seems like cars are able to block bike lanes, cars are not parked properly, sometimes they're blocking sidewalks too, and there's almost a sense of a double standard. Do you hear complaints like that, and if so, what would be your response?
Yeah, I do. We do hear complaints like that, and they're right. You know, we've got TNC vehicles and other vehicles blocking bike lanes all the time in San Francisco, and we seem to not be able to get a handle on that either. So it's a valid complaint. It's absolutely a valid complaint. Cars block pedestrians, cars block bicycles, scooters can block sidewalks. I think what I say to people is, as we see in a crowded urban environment, you can never have 100% separation. There's always going to be a little bit of overflow with certain modes getting in the way of other modes, and we can have jerks on any mode. We can have jerky scooter riders and jerky drivers and jerky pedestrians, and it's a crowded urban environment, and we all just have to do our best to get along, make sure that we're all focusing on safety and we're focusing on sustainable transportation. So.
Well, and since you chair the San Francisco MTA and responsible for public transportation, what is the general sense of how scooters might impact public transit? Are they looked at as something that could be competitive and cannibalize transit, or something that can help augment it and actually improve it?
Probably a little bit of both, and I'm hoping it falls down more on the augment side. It can be a great way for people to get to and from a bus stop, you know, finish off that last mile or seven blocks that transit gets people close to their destination. I think what we're seeing with the electric moped scooter, Scoot, when they shared their most recent data with us, it showed that the Scoots were taking more trips out of TNCs and out of private vehicles than they were taking trips from transit or taking trips from biking and walking. So I'm hoping we'll see a similar profile with these new little scooters. And I hope that they can augment public transit. As anybody who's ridden Muni in San Francisco at rush hour knows, we have an overcrowding issue at rush hour, as does pretty much every single transit agency in the world. If these scooters can help be a little relief valve for that during rush hour, maybe that will be a good thing. If people are going a further distance, then you might want to ride a little electric scooter than Muni. And the public bus and the underground system is probably a better bet.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me bring in Susan Shaheen, co-director of the UC Berkeley Transportation and Sustainability Research Center. Susan, thank you for standing by. I wanted to ask you, generally speaking, scooters have been around for a while. This is not a brand new technology. Can you just explain for listeners what makes these particular scooters different and new?
Right. Well, these are pretty exciting because they're electric scooters. And as Cheryl mentioned, people are having a lot of fun with them. They go up to about 20 miles per hour, and people are really enjoying them. So they're a different scooter experience than we've seen previously in the shared mobility ecosystem. The Scoot Network has been with us for quite some time, but that's a more traditional moped-style scooter. So this idea that you can just jump on an electric scooter is a new idea, and people seem to be responding very positively to, I think, the ease of access to these particular vehicles.
And you mentioned that they're electric power, and I mentioned that at the top of the hour, too. Is there something particularly beneficial about having them be electric? I mean, is that the fact that battery prices have come down and enabled these scooter technologies, does that provide a better user experience in some way?
Right. Well, I think with, you know, the speeds going up to about 20 miles per hour allows people to go a bit faster. I've heard a lot of people talking about women being able to wear skirts and be able to pop around town on these. And so I think that's part of the notion, is that you can go a bit faster than human walking on these particular devices.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a sense of the user profile? I mean, I hear anecdotally it seems to be mostly men of a certain age using these scooters. I mean, you mentioned that women maybe have their own benefits from riding them, but do you have a sense of who's using them?
I have not seen data yet to suggest who the users are. We have done a lot of research in the past at UC Berkeley on users of the Segway Human Transporter. You guys might remember that device. And what we found in our research on the Segway HT was that it definitely tended to be more of a male user profile that affiliated with the Segway. In the case of an electric scooter, it could be both men and women. It doesn't surprise me if it leans one way or the other. But I think we need more data to get a sense of who the early adopters are.
All right. Well, spoken like a true researcher wanting more data. So, and then maybe we should also back up a little bit and just provide an overview for listeners. I mean, how far can you go with these technologies? You know, with one on a single battery charge, you know, what's that like? And then maybe, Susan, you can also describe a little bit the pricing mechanisms and how you pay for it and what the price rate is for using these technologies.
Right. So in terms of the number of trips per charge, I'm not familiar with that number. Cheryl, are you?
No, what I'm hearing is that the scooters, the charge can last about half a day if it's getting heavy use in the city. So a lot of them are needing to be picked up sort of midday, but I'm just sort of hearing that anecdotally. I think the charge will get you around the city. You know, of course, San Francisco is quite small. We're only 7 miles by 7 miles. So as long as you're not going up huge hills, I think the charge lasts for the distance that anybody is riding them at this point.
Well, then once you're done using it, or the charge is running out, is the obligation on the company to pick up the scooter then and charge it?
Yes. What I've been reading about is that they do employ people who go out and scoop up the scooters and take them back and charge them and then redeploy them out into like known places on the sidewalk. And it's all enabled by GPS, so they can find the scooters, they can see how low or charged the battery is online, so they know which ones to go grab and recharge.
Mm-hmm. And Susan, just back to you on this pricing question, how do people pay for these scooters?
Yeah, well, for example, Bird, its current rates are about $1 per ride plus 15 cents per minute. So these are pretty affordable forms of transportation. And so in addition to their ease of use and probably the fun factor, you also have a very inexpensive ride to get around town.
Mm-hmm. And Susan, can you explain why all three companies deposited their scooters at the exact same time? I mean, was there a coordination among them for this all to come together like this?
You know, I am not aware of any coordination among the companies in doing so, but what I can tell you as somebody who's studied innovation for over 20 years is it is not surprising to see that people have similar ideas around the same time. And some of it can come from people talking to each other, and the word spreads quickly among the developer entrepreneurial space. But one may motivate the other to get into the market space sooner than they had previously planned because they now see that there's a first mover. So I think some of this is a first mover activity that may generate interest, but in the space of innovation, oftentimes there's lots of people having the same kind of idea around the same time.
Mm-hmm. And do you know where, geographically speaking, these scooter companies deployed the scooters? I mean, we heard Cheryl mention Santa Monica. Do you know where around the state? Is this just a California thing in a few key cities? Is this outside of California and other states around the U.S.? What is it like globally? I'm just curious for the geographic context here.
Right. So we're not actively studying this phenomenon. We really want to. I just finished teaching, by the way, on Friday, so that will allow us a little bit more bandwidth to start getting deeper in the scooter space. But to my understanding, there are scooters being deployed in the D.C. area, and they have been deployed in both Southern California and in the Bay Area. We also hear reports of them being in the East Bay.
Mm-hmm. And I know I've seen one at least in Rockridge, so I can verify that. Cheryl, mm-hmm. Are you getting inquiries, or have you looked at other jurisdictions that have the scooters there? You did mention Santa Monica. Are people talking to you about it? Are you trying to get a sense of where they're at so you can learn from what other jurisdictions are doing?
I'm sure that the MTA staff, now that we have this this permitting legislation out into the world, I'm sure we're going to start hearing from other cities. I'm not sure if staff has actually talked to other cities yet, but I'm sure that's to come, because if somebody can figure out, if one municipality can figure out how do we make this work as a positive for our city and how do we make sure that we can add these to our transportation world and keep everybody safe, then I'm sure it will spread to other cities, and I hope we can be the city that actually can do that and help this work for everybody. Mm-hmm. But another thing that I'm noticing with these scooters in San Francisco is, as compared to the scoots and compared to the bike shares, these seem to be attracting a wider socioeconomic spectrum than some of the other modes.
And I can just report for any listeners in San Francisco, it looks like we just had a very small, I think, earthquake
that
we felt here. So this is live radio, and you're getting your seismic update. So anyone who's in a potentially vulnerable area, you might want to just be on alert here. And hopefully that wasn't a more severe shock elsewhere outside of San Francisco. Well, on the topic at hand, we'll monitor the seismic situation. I just wanted to see, I check with Cheryl on this, if there are other, if there was any regulations at all before the scooter companies came in that they had to comply with, or was this a brand new kind of, you know, pioneering technology that also had to sort of pioneer the regulations as well?
Yeah, we didn't have any permit situation around scooters in San Francisco, so that's new to us, and that needed to be passed. That was passed very quickly. Staff and City Hall did the work very, very quickly to get this permit legislation in place, because the scooters were deployed, people loved them, started using them immediately, so we knew we needed to act on that quickly. Other than that, the only thing that applies are the basic state laws, which say that the users, I believe, have to wear a helmet. I think they need to be over 18, but I'm not positive on that one. As far as the state law says they shouldn't ride on the sidewalk And then some municipalities might have variations of that state law because the municipalities kind of get to control what goes on their sidewalks. To Susan's earlier point about the Segways, when those looked like they were going to be super popular, San Francisco passed a regulation saying Segways couldn't ride on the sidewalk either.
Mm-hmm. So we are going to take a quick break here because we are joined by Joseph Pace. And of course, City Vision's listeners know Joseph as the other host, and he does most of the hosting duties here. So it's pretty exciting to have both City Vision's hosts here, at least for me, in the studio. So Joseph is here to talk about KLW's pledge campaign and try to get listeners excited about joining up with what we've got going on here. So, Joseph, welcome.
It's an honor to be here across the table with you, Ethan, as well, and with you, our listeners. 1-800-525-9917 is the number to dial to show your support for KLW on this new member Monday as part of our public radio reunion. You can also pledge online at kalw.org. And I just thought that tremor we just had was a call to action.
Absolutely.
For those of you who haven't yet picked up the phone, it's time. We're trying to shake you up a little bit. It's time for you to show your support for stations like KLW and programs like City Visions.
Absolutely. This is earth-shaking stuff here that we've got going on. This is live. You get your news updates. You get to deep dive into issues like electric scooters. So we're very excited to have you be a part of this. For the listeners, this is KALW Reunion Week, and you can donate now at kalw.org or call in at 1-800-525-9917. This is what's shaking right here. It's KALW.
Let's see how many other associations with earthquakes we can come up with in the next couple of minutes. So, really, seriously, though, we're asking you to support a station that connects you with the important news of the world and also the news from your home area. We're one of many public affairs programs here, like Your Call and Cross Currents. City Vision's been on the air for more than 25 years, and we bring this forum for conversation and connection to you every week because we know it's important to you. So show that support by dialing 1-800-525-9917 or going online to kalw.org.
I mean, we know that the media landscape has undergone a seismic shift recently, right? And, you know, it's nobody's fault, right? But we do need to be supporting our local public radio, and KLW is the place to do that. KLW.org, 1-800-525-9917.
This is a space for real information, for real dialogue, in a place that cares about making connections. And we are a place for you as listeners to be engaged with your community. So show us that you care about us continuing to do this kind of work that you have told us you like and want to continue to be a part of by dialing 1-800-525-9917 or clicking on the Donate Now button at kalw.org. And I think we should get you back to that program. What do you think, Ethan?
It sounds good to me.
I think we're out of ways to compare this program to an earthquake.
Well, thank you so much, Joseph, and we look forward to having you back on in a little bit. And now back to our regularly scheduled City Visions episode. So this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KLW San Francisco, and on the web at kalw.org. Tonight we're talking scooters and other forms of urban personal mobility, and we're joined by guest Cheryl Brinkman, chairman of the Board of Directors of the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency, or SFMTA, and Susan Shaheen, co-director of the UC Berkeley Transportation and Sustainability Research Center and director of Innovative Mobility Research. We do invite you to call in with questions or comments. The phone lines are open now. Are scooters good or bad? Have you had an experience with scooters or another mode of transportation that you would like to share? So weigh in with your thoughts now by dialing 866-798-TALK. Again, that's 866-798-8255. Or you can email us right now at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on kalw.org or on our Facebook page. And we are at City Visions KALW on Twitter as well. So let's go to the phones. We have Karen from Berkeley calling in. Karen, welcome to City Visions. What's your question for the experts?
Yeah, good evening. I wanted to know, number one, does that mean that all the scooters that are on the streets are not permitted, and does each one have to have a license on it?
Okay, so but let's let Cheryl address that one if you can, Cheryl.
So for the licensing, no, I don't believe that scooters need licenses, those small electric scooters that go under a certain miles per hour. That's a state-level regulation. And the scooters that are currently on the sidewalks, right now they will remain. It's the end of this month is the deadline period for a company to have applied for and received a permit from the SFMTA. We needed to give them enough time to figure out the permitting, comply with the data requirements, all of those things. We couldn't, you know, it seemed a bit unfair to just immediately put it into effect. So they do have until the end of this month to apply for and receive a permit.
And Karen, it sounded like you had a second question as well.
No, that's just was it. I want to know if they needed if each scooter needed a license, and if the scooters that were around and being used had a permit or not.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Karen, for those questions. We also have an email in from Sam, and Sam says, I was under the impression that Segway and hoverboards, for example, are prohibited on the sidewalks, but the scooters commonly ride fast on the sidewalk. So that's a comment from Sam. Cheryl, what do you say to people like Sam who observe that kind of behavior?
He's right. They should not be on the sidewalk, fast or slow. Those scooters should not be ridden on the sidewalk. I think the only exception for that, it might be similar to bicycles, that children on non-electric powered scooters, the little razor scooters that we're used to seeing kids and young people on, those can be on the sidewalk because they're not electric powered. But the current batch of scooters out there from the three companies, Bird, Spin, and Lime, should not be riding on the sidewalks in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. And we also have an email in from Anna, and I also want to thank Sam for that comment. And Anna says, mobility as a service is great for two things, last-mile commuters or tourists, and introducing riders to new mobility devices. But there are reasons that we should be supporting ownership. And in particular, she talks about her concern that if one company controls nearly all the last-mile travel in a city, that's risky if it gets hacked or if it, as she says, gets an attitude. So I think she's concerned about this idea that we may be sort of outsourcing to private sources and maybe a monopoly-type company, these first and last-mile solutions. Susan Shaheen, do you have any thoughts in response to that comment?
Sure. I think there's a lot of concern about us outsourcing so much that we end up with a monopoly or a duopoly, and what could happen to public transportation, for example, services that people support with tax dollars. So I think that there's a lot of interest in understanding how the marketplace evolves in terms of mobility on demand. With respect to the notion that everybody should own their own scooter, that may be prohibitive for some people. And so one of the things that I think is interesting about the sharing economy is the opportunity for people to only use an asset when they need it, and then they are not burdened with the cost and responsibilities of ownership. And that's one of the premises of the sharing economy, and arguably one of the advantages of it is that you don't have to have all these sunk and fixed costs, and you're possibly getting, you know, better uses from vehicles without having a dedicated ownership model. But I certainly understand the comment and concern about the creation of a monopoly or duopoly, or a situation in which there is just not a competitive marketplace, and we might like the dollar per ride pricing, but that if at some point this becomes a monopoly, we may not see those dollar per ride prices any longer. And so I think that's a valid comment and concern.
Mm-hmm. And Cheryl, we know we're going to be losing you in just a few minutes, so I wanted to ask you a couple last questions. One of them is that this idea that the companies are still going to be able to leave their products on the sidewalk for people to pick up and use, but we don't let other companies or people necessarily do what they want on the sidewalk. So can you explain why there, you know, is there a difference here, and if so, why, with how scooters are treated?
So they will be allowed to leave them on the sidewalk, but part of the permit structure will be that they have to be left in places that aren't going to get in the way of pedestrians or people who use wheelchairs or people with vision issues. Private bikes are locked on the sidewalk all the time. That's why we have so many bike racks, is that's a way to keep the bikes organized on the sidewalk and keep them out of the path of travel. and the jump bikes are also lockable to public bike racks. So we do have some precedent there for things being on the sidewalk. We have newsstands on the sidewalk. We have transit shelters. So again, I think as long as it's done in an organized manner and people understand that there are rules and that there would be repercussions, I'm hoping again that people will want to use these scooters so that they'll be willing to follow the rules on these.
And I know you don't deal, I would assume, at SFMTA necessarily with hazardous waste or those kinds of issues, but in terms of the environmental impacts of these scooters, I'm told they'll last about 2 months. So what is going to be done to dispose of them and their lithium batteries? Are they going to be recycled? Are we recycling these scooters just generally? Do you know what's happening in that respect?
That's a really good question, and that goes back to the whole sustainability question about these new transportation modes. I actually don't know the answer to that, and that's something that I would hope the companies have figured out, but one of my concerns around this, again, it's the sustainability of these companies themselves, not just the product they're putting out there, but are these companies going to be around in a year? Are they going to be around in 2 years? To Susan's point, will they suddenly raise the prices when there's only one successful scooter company in San Francisco? Will the price per ride go up to a point where it's not as accessible for people? So there's a lot of questions around these still, and I hope that the companies that are putting these scooters out there have a good business plan and they know what they're doing and they are going to be operating in a sustainable and environmentally friendly way and a way that's respectful to the cities in which they launch, but it does remain to be seen a bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, so more to come then in a lot of different ways, regulations, technologies, and otherwise. Well, Cheryl Brinkman, Chairman of the Board of Directors of San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency, I want to thank you for coming on, and we're going to let you go a little bit early. Thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
All right. And this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight, we're talking scooters and other forms of urban personal mobility. We were just joined by Cheryl Brinkman from the SFMTA, but staying with us is Susan Shaheen, co-director of the UC Berkeley Transportation and Sustainability Research Center and director of Innovative Mobility Research. And we're also welcoming Jessica Lehman, executive director of the Senior and Disability Action. Jessica, welcome to City Visions.
Thank you so much.
And, of course, we invite you to call in with questions or comments. And these phone lines are open, as I mentioned, so you can weigh in now by dialing 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can also email us at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on kalw.org or on our Facebook page. And you can also reach us on Twitter at cityvisionskalw. So, Jessica, we're very pleased that you can join us from Senior and Disability Action. I wanted to ask you how your organization feels about these scooters. What's your take on them?
Well, thanks for having me. We have a lot of concerns about scooters. Seniors and people with disabilities and kids and other groups have always been concerned with bicycles on the sidewalks, that it can be very dangerous. It makes people fearful of just trying to walk down the street. And, of course, all of those concerns are much higher with e-scooters and e-bicycles that are going so much faster and can be so much more dangerous. We know that the risk of getting hit is very real. The e-scooters, of course, came to San Francisco very, very quickly, it felt like. And I know pretty much every day, or at least every other day, I see a scooter on the sidewalk, usually on Market Street, like on a major thoroughfare where there's a lot of pedestrians. And so there's a very real danger of being hit and of being hurt. And, of course, seniors and people with disabilities can be more likely to be badly injured and to end up in the hospital, and that doesn't need to happen. Also, we know that, particularly for seniors and people with disabilities, but really for everyone, that if you worry that you can't get down the street safely, if you can't get even from your street to the bus stop without worrying about being hit, that you may choose not to go out. And isolation can be a very real problem with serious health outcomes for our communities. And, of course, it affects all of us. If people choose not to go out because they don't feel safe, then those are people that we're not learning from and getting to benefit from in our community. Mm-hmm. So we have a vision of a city where everyone can participate actively in the community and everyone can get around safely. And I think there's probably a way for all of us to coexist, that this isn't to say that e-scooters cannot exist in our cities. But I think it hasn't yet been figured out exactly how to do that in a way that's safe. How do we make sure that e-scooters stay off our sidewalks? How do we make sure that they're not left on our sidewalks in places where people will trip over or where people can't get out of a paratransit van, for example? And at this point, I think the companies really kind of swooped in, dumped a lot of scooters on our streets, you know, are making money off it, but it's really up to them to figure out how do we do this in a way that is safe and respectable for everyone.
And what would you like to see done? I mean, if you don't want them on the sidewalks, what would be your ideal scenario for how these scooters would be used in the cities?
Well, I think for starters, I think the big thing is they need to be off our sidewalks. And that's a tricky enforcement question. And that's why I was saying, I think the companies have a big challenge, but I think they really have to figure out how do they make sure that people are not driving on the sidewalks? And they need to come up with a better plan for parking them. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of talk about that in San Francisco, of course, but to make sure that scooters are not left in the way, that people need to be able to walk down the sidewalk safely without worrying about being hit or tripping over a scooter. Mm-hmm. And I think just getting them off the sidewalks, either moving or parked, would be a huge step towards making sure we can all get around in different ways safely.
And I know the constituents of your organization are not necessarily scooter riders, but if they're not on the sidewalks, isn't there a concern around rider safety? If they're trying to share the streets with cars, isn't that a more dangerous situation potentially overall?
Yeah, I mean, and I think that really goes back to all of us working together to build safe streets for everyone. We are doing a lot of work around pedestrian safety. You know, we've been lucky to work with Cheryl Brinkman, who you just talked to, and the MCA Board of Directors with the San Francisco Bike Coalition. I think there's a lot of interest in figuring out what does it look like to have sidewalks and protected bike lanes and streets and pedestrian areas where we can all get around safely. We have pretty suddenly added e-scooters to the mix, and we need to not do that in a way that sacrifices everyone else. I think we need to take a step back and figure out, okay, how can we do that in a way that is safe for people on the sidewalks and is safe for riders of e-scooters? I'm sure there's a way there. I don't have the answer, but they need to find it.
And are there other forms of urban personal mobility that your organization has taken a different stance on? In other words, is there something unique about these scooters that you've responded to organizationally?
I don't know if there's something unique about them. I think with the coalitions that we've worked with around building safe streets for seniors and people with disabilities and families and everyone, it's really about making sure that sidewalks are protected for people to be able to get around safely and comfortably. It is interesting. One of the other issues that we've talked about is delivery robots, and that's been a similar issue of where are they and are they safe and do people feel safe? And as far as whether seniors and people with disabilities are using these, I've heard some of the companies talk about really interesting potential applications, like the delivery robot technology can actually keep track of where are their curb ramps for people in wheelchairs or with other mobility devices to be able to get on and off a curb. Unfortunately, it looks like a lot of these companies aren't pursuing those, but I think they don't see them as being as lucrative financially. But there really are some interesting intersections of some of this technology really being able to benefit all of our communities.
And Susan, I wanted to bring you in just real quickly on this rider safety issue. What do you think is a sort of optimal solution here in terms of ensuring safety for the scooter riders?
Yeah, I think ultimately we would provide a safe space for cyclists and also our scooter users. And, you know, that's not the sidewalks, and that's such a real challenge. And this is something that Segway faced when it was introduced. It was not allowed on sidewalks, and it really needed a designated space in which to operate safely. And so that's a challenge, I think, as we move forward with more active forms of transportation, Ethan, is making sure that we are creating a safe space for, say, lower speed modes than just, you know, walking on a sidewalk, perhaps a protected bike lane type area that could be shared by scooters and e-bikes, or, you know, operating on the lower end of the speed spectrum would be a step in the right direction.
Great. Well, I want to welcome back in, pause this conversation, welcome back in Joseph Pace, who's going to talk more about KLW Radio and what we offer to listeners and what we gain in return from all of you. So, Joseph, welcome back.
Thanks for taking a break from this exciting conversation about innovation in the Bay Area and how we figure out how to absorb it and make our lives better day in and day out here. It's something that we talk about quite a bit here on City Visions and on KLW. And if you want to become part of what sustains the programming you love on this radio station, now is the time to dial 1-800-525-9917 or go to klw.org and click on the Donate Now button. If you're new to KLW or new to the Bay Area, you are welcome here, and you must be a public radio person because you're listening during our membership drive. So why don't you show your support not only by listening, but by donating at 1-800-525-9917 or klw.org.
You know, it's your support that enables programs like this to be broadcast, to bring you these timely issues. You know, there aren't a lot of programs that are going to focus on these very local issues that affect all of us here living in the San Francisco Bay Area. I think these electric scooters are just one example of that. And that's the kind of programming that we can bring to you, programs like City Visions and the whole host of programs that KLW Radio offers. But it's dependent on listeners like you to be able to support this, to call in, but also to pledge your support, become a member, become a new member. If you're a sustaining member, we appreciate that, and we want you to stay with us and keep this show going. It's KALW.org to donate, or 1-800-525-9917. We're standing by for you.
In fact, you talked about sustaining memberships. We just got Scott Weitz from Oakland to be a sustaining member. So thank you to Scott. And we also got another anonymous donation from Oakland. So I'm really happy to hear how much Oakland is represented. So where's San Francisco here? Where's the peninsula? Where's Marin? Well, now's your time to show your support. 1-800-525-9917, or you can go to klw.org. Unite with your fellow listeners to support the media that you love here on this station. It's engaging, it's open-minded, and it's community-powered. KALW.org or 1-800-525-9917.
So it's great to hear that Oakland is stepping up, and we do want to get those San Francisco members in. We're talking about San Francisco e-scooters, but this is an issue that affects the whole Bay Area, and that's the thing about KLW. I mean, we'll talk about something like San Francisco, but it's really Bay Area-wide, and we bring you the issues that often we're facing here first. So if it's new technology that we're dealing with, soon the rest of the country is going to deal with it, and we'll have a conversation about it. We'll help you understand what's going on, and we'll listen to your feedback, your comments, your questions, and we love that support, and we hope you keep it up. Donate, KLW.org, 1-800-525-9917.
This station is an expression of the collective power of you, our listeners, our community, and those of us who bring our efforts to make radio here. Come together with us and help us keep this alternative way of making media strong in this area and setting an example for the rest of the country. 1-800-525-9917 or KLW.org. Now back to you, Ethan.
All right. Thank you, Joseph. That was your double shot of City Visions hosts that you only get at Pledge Week. So that's a special occasion to get both of us here in the studio. So thank you, Joseph, for that. This is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we're talking scooters and other forms of urban personal mobility. We were joined earlier in the program by Cheryl Brinkman, chairman of the SFMTA. Still with us, Susan Shaheen, co-director of the UC Berkeley Transportation and Sustainability Research Center and director of Innovative Mobility Research. And we were also just joined, lucky to be joined, by Jessica Lehman, Executive Director of the Senior and Disability Action. We want to hear from you. We want to hear your questions or comments for these guests that we have on to talk about e-scooters. You can dial now 1-866-798-TALK. Again, that's 866-798-8255 with your questions. You can also email us at cityvisions@kalw.org. or post a comment on our website or on our Facebook page. And we are also City Visions at City Visions KLW on Twitter as well. So let's go to the phone lines. We have Jim standing by in San Francisco. Jim, welcome to City Visions.
Hello. I have two comments. One is statistics on people getting hit by bicycles on sidewalks in San Francisco or Berkeley, if they control that. And then it seems like you're more likely to get hit by a bicyclist when you're on the crossing the street than when you're walking down the sidewalk.
So thank you, Jim, for that question. I think Susan Shaheen might be the best situated to respond to that. So Susan, let me hand that one to you.
So Ethan, can you repeat that for me? I just heard a tad bit of the question.
Sure. So, Jim, I don't know if you wanted to repeat it, but maybe correct me if I'm restating it incorrectly, but that the danger with things like bicycles is that you're going to get hit as you're stepping off onto the street, not onto the sidewalk. And so, therefore, you know, that would be a bigger concern in terms of danger. Am I stating that correctly?
Right, right. And how many incidents of people getting hit by bikes on sidewalks do they have? And what would be the age group? Are they mostly old people or just any group of people?
Okay. Well, I'm not sure I can answer that question regarding bike safety statistics. I'm more of a sharing expert, so I have more safety data related to bike sharing use. So unfortunately, I'm unable to answer that. Perhaps Jessica has some information.
Yeah, Jessica, let me pass it to you. From your constituents and your organization, are you kind of getting even a rough sense of who is affected by accidents involving bikes?
I hate to say as well that I do not have those statistics. What I would do is reach out to Walk SF because I think they might have it. I can check with them later, but of course, if callers want to look them up, they're a great resource. And as far as ages, you know, we certainly hear it from seniors and people with disabilities. I think that there's probably a higher proportion of seniors and people with disabilities getting hit because the concern among those populations is that people can't always jump out of the way in time. Mm-hmm. I totally hear your point about it not only being a risk when a bicycle or an e-scooter is on the sidewalk, but also when somebody steps off the curb. And I think that's also another enforcement issue about making sure that e-scooters in the street are stopping at crosswalks and paying attention to pedestrians. So thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah, thank you, Jim, for that question. And on this topic of data and tracking some of the impacts here, one of the issues that comes up with e-scooters is about privacy. And I wanted to ask Susan, are these companies sharing the location of consumers and other data with MTA? Are they keeping it for themselves? You know, what's basically happening with the data that's coming out of these scooter companies?
No, that's a really great question, right? Because a lot of these solutions are going to be really rich with data about people's trip times, their travel times, their origin destinations, right? We're going to be able to understand, or they're going to be able to understand a lot about how people are using these scooters to get around, even how they're using them related to the hilly streets that we face in San Francisco. With respect to the data sharing elements, I have not read the permitting requirements, but Cheryl Brinkman definitely mentioned that there is going to be a requirement to share data as part of the permitting process. So I think we'll learn more about what is involved in that data sharing exercise. Oftentimes we find in our work in the shared mobility space is that companies are willing to share data with a data use agreement in place and a non-disclosure agreement in place in order to have some degree of third-party validation of what they're doing. But typically the company is due to proprietary interests as well as privacy of the individual. We call it PII, or personal identifiable information. A lot of times the companies are just reluctant to release a data set to the public without there being protections in place. So we'll know more, I think, as the days pass after we find out about the permits, because Cheryl was noting that there still is not a permitted scooter company. So we don't know what they're working through in terms of data accessibility right now, Ethan. But I think that'll be very interesting to hear follow-up on.
And Susan, I know you've worked with data from some of the ride-sharing companies, and I'm wondering if you can explain what the potential benefits for the public would be if we could access that data. What are some of the ways that we could use that data in a positive way for the public?
Yeah, I mean, those data are really useful because they tell us a lot about people's trip-making patterns, what times of day, where there's a lot of activity with respect to public transit, where we can see that there's connections, first mile, last mile, or potentially where there's gap filling occurring. Like if we see a lot of late night transportation, potentially in areas where we don't have public transit service, it tells us a lot about how these innovative services can potentially fill these gaps in our transportation network. And all cities and locations have these gaps, either on a temporal scale, by time of day, or also on a spatial scale. So these data can be very useful to transportation planning and also help us ultimately, I think, craft really good public policies that can help to maximize the benefits to the public by saying, well, at certain times of day, maybe these are not the best streets to be operating on because of peak congestion, or that we really want to see higher occupant vehicles getting access to the rights of way on certain streets of San Francisco, say at AM peak. So it helps to inform the policy process, not just to inform our understanding about the uses of the system.
Mm-hmm. So this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. We're talking scooters tonight. We're joined on the phone by Susan Shaheen of UC Berkeley's Transportation and Sustainability Research Center, and Jessica Lehman, Executive Director of Senior and Disability Action. We've got just a few minutes left, but we do invite you to call in with any questions. That number is 866-798-TALK. Again, that's 866-798-8255. So, Susan,
and Ethan, can I add on that last point?
Absolutely, yes. Jessica, please proceed.
Thank you. I just wanted to say, as far as looking at public policy, our organization does a lot of work around transit justice, right, with a lot of coalition partners, that we believe that everyone should be able to get around the city safely and be able to participate actively in the community, whether it's getting to City Hall, getting to a job, getting to the doctor's appointment, whatever. And it's really mm-hmm. important that if scooter use is taken, I mean, scooter use should be taken into account in public policy as far as what is the impact on our roads and to our pedestrians. But I think we need to be cautious about looking at, okay, people can use scooters, and so maybe we don't need bus service here, in recognition that not everyone will be able to use scooters or choose to use them or afford to use them. That we really need to keep in mind all of the people in our community and who is using what and who is benefiting and who is potentially sacrificed.
Well, Jessica, on that point, benefits, I mean, does anyone, any of your constituents potentially stand to benefit from the advent of e-scooters? I mean, could you see a way in which they would be, you know, furthering the mission of your organization and helping your constituents?
You know, it's not something that our folks have been talking about. I don't see why not, right? I don't see why there aren't people in every group that may choose to use a scooter. I think it's part of what we would really ask the companies to do in terms of reaching out to different stakeholder groups, not just after the fact, but are they really interested in what is the place for people with different disabilities or for seniors? What are the needs? How do we make any kind of innovation really inclusive?
Mm-hmm. And Susan, I wanted to go back to you at a kind of a new topic here about the economic model of these scooter companies. And mm-hmm. what do you observe about their business model that seems to be innovative? And does it seem sustainable to you?
Yeah, the business model is quite interesting because the scooters don't cost a lot. And there's a number of articles that have been written about the potential business model, you know, stating that scooter costs can be as low as $250 per scooter, ranging up to about $400 with the Bird scooter, for example. And there's been some analysis done that within a month's time, they will have broke even on rental use of the scooter, and then after that, it's profit. If that's the case, then you also have to take into consideration the operational costs to charge the scooters. And by the way, Ethan, I did do some research while we've been chatting and found out what the range of these scooters are, and they range between 15 to 37 miles.
Okay, so that's helpful. So thank you for that on-the-spot research.
Yeah, and that's really, really important, right, because that factors into the business model, how many scooters you need, what's the range on the scooter, because they're going to have to be brought back in for charging. And so all of those operational and logistics issues come off of the profit, right? So ultimately, are they going to be sustainable? Thus far, I'd say given the very low capital costs of the scooter, it's quite possible that they could scale to a level that becomes sustainable. But there's a lot that has to be taken into account that we don't have data on, like what's the enforcement piece of this costing the operators. So Cheryl mentioned that enforcement is the responsibility of the companies themselves. So what level of enforcement is going to be required ultimately, and what are the costs of that? What are the costs of redistribution and recharging?
Do you think this model could work in a low density area, or is this really just about high density areas? And I guess by extension, could it potentially facilitate more acceptance of urban density if people are able to get around without needing automobiles to clog traffic and, you know, create those normal objections to density?
Right. Well, we've heard about these scooters being deployed at UCLA, for example, so a college campus. So that's a different kind of land use environment than the city of San Francisco. So there may be environments that these scooters take to very readily, because there's more space for the scooters to be parked as well as to be operated. And it would not preclude them from operating in a more wide-ranging geographic space, maybe some more suburban areas they could be used in. And a lot of times when we're looking at the business model, we're looking at those upfront capital costs. If the capital costs are really high, it typically means that shared mobility services are less likely to go into less dense areas.
Yep, that certainly makes sense. So we just got about a minute left, and I just want to give each of you a chance for a quick last word. So, Jessica, let me start with you. What do you think would be your number one ask in terms of going forward with scooters, if, you know, from a policy perspective?
Well, it's actually really funny. While you were talking just now, I saw a scooter come down the street. The rider was not wearing a helmet and ran the red light.
So
that's a reminder to me, that there are a lot of safety concerns. I don't think they're insurmountable, but I think the companies that have introduced them, that are touting them as innovative, need to take a step back and make a plan. How do we make sure people follow the laws? How do we make sure people aren't on the sidewalks?
Safety. Definitely. Well, sorry to jump in, but it's 10 seconds left for Susan. I wanted to let her just get one last word. And Susan, your number one wish for scooters.
So I think scooters can be a great mode to add to our transportation ecosystem, but we've got to be really cognizant of equity concerns, as Jessica mentioned, as well as public safety.
All right. Well, we're going to have to pause it there, although scooters will continue, but that's City Visions for this evening. Our guest tonight, we were joined earlier by Cheryl Brinkman, chair of the Board of Directors of San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency, or SFMTA. And also we were joined by Susan Shaheen, you just heard, co-director of UC Berkeley's Transportation and Sustainability Research Center. Susan, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
And we were joined as well by Jessica Lehman, Executive Director of Senior and Disability Action. Thank you for being on.
Thank you.
And thanks, of course, to all of you for joining me this evening, and Joseph Pache for coming in with the pledge assistance. For a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, and to subscribe to alerts and to download podcasts, visit the City Visions page on KALW.org. Our engineer this evening was David LaTulipe. Tonight's show was produced by Wendy Holcomb. Join host Joseph Pache next Monday as we discuss what teens are doing to combat relationship abuse. This is Ethan Elkind. Thank you so much for listening. Good night, and have a great rest of your week.